to the fourth case this morning, United States v. Gorman.
My name is Bo Brindley, and I represent the defendant appellant, Jamarcus Gorman. As the record indicates, Mr. Gorman was convicted after trial for a single charge of perjury, which was based on his answer to one question posed to him by a grand juror: did you have a Bentley in your garage?
The grand jury.
Yes.
I could not find the grand jury transcript in the record. I'd really be appreciative if the parties would supplement the record.
I think it was supplemented very late, maybe just a few days ago, and just added.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
We did not get it.
Yeah, I got it very late. It was just a couple of days ago.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then I'll get it.
Yes. I think it has been supplemented. The single question put to him was, did you have a Bentley in the garage? And
along those lines, too, though, the entire grand jury transcript was made available to the jury, wasn't it? The entire transcript was given to the jury?
It was. They had the entirety of it, yes. His response to that question was no, that he didn't have a Bentley in the garage. And as noted in the briefing here, his response to that question utilized the most prominent and most prevalent definition of that phrase, to have. That definition indicates a possession or a control, and the facts and evidence introduced at the trial indicated clearly he didn't have possession or control over this car. In fact, they had to break into it in order to gain access to it. They had to have it moved.
He exercised a lot of control over it after he was asked about it by the agents, didn't he? By having it towed out of there, cut into, and so forth. That's control, isn't it?
Well, he did not have at that point they took control of it, but he didn't own it. He didn't possess it. He didn't have any sort of possessory interest in it. And what I think is important is, in terms of context, previously to the question which was asked to him about whether he had a Bentley in the garage, he also was asked questions referring to his Bentley, indicating ownership. In fact, the previous question to the question for which the charge arose was one where they're talking about his Bentley. And so for the purposes of his answer, the context that was provided was one indicating ownership. Did you have a Bentley?
I want you to know something.
Yes.
My law clerk and I both think that you would make Bill Clinton proud of you.
I don't know whether that's
with the meaning of the word have.
Whether that's good or bad under these circumstances, I don't know. But in terms of the way that the context came out,
I'm complimenting you.
Okay. I think that part of the important question is the question: did you have? And they're referring to him personally, and all of the evidence at the trial really indicated this Bentley belonged to his cousin, Jermone Gorman. He's the one that had it there. And therefore, his answer to the question was literally true. It's plain on the face of the question that his answer was, in fact, literally true. Now, the government suggested in their response that he obviously was intending to give a false answer. He was trying to evade the question, and they indicated some of his other answers were inaccurate. But that's really not the issue. To make that the issue would be to conflate two of the elements here. One of the elements is literal falsity. Another one is intent. And regardless of what his intent was, when he answered that question, he gave an answer that was literally true under the most prevalent definition. And at best for the government, what we have is a situation of equipoise, in which there's that definition and then the definition that they have advanced, which is not, according to the citations provided in our briefing previously, that is a not by any means a prevalent definition of this term. And as a result, as this court has found in the Williams case, when you have two equally possible definitions, regardless of what the intent is, whether it's to evade or to deceive, the defendant cannot be found guilty of perjury under those circumstances. It's simply not possible.
In the district court, you seem to argue specifically about extracting the testimony about the money in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also object to testimony about removing the Bentley from Gorman's garage?
I was not the attorney for Jamarcus Gorman at the trial court, but his trial counsel did object to all of the entire evidence, all of the conspiracy with respect to the Bentley and its movement and the taking of money from that Bentley. And with respect to that second issue raised in our brief, the one of the principal problems with the court's ruling on this is the court found inextricable intertwinement, and then after doing that, never really did any sort of actual 403 analysis to determine, regardless of whether it was inextricably intertwined, whether it was more prejudicial than probative. And I think one of the extraordinary facts...
Go ahead. I'm curious about that, how this is presented to the jury. Was it presented, was it labeled as a theft or misappropriation of the Bentley, or were just the facts about the towing and the cutting and the reaching in to get the bag out presented?
I don't recall whether an argument it was referred to by the government as a theft. My recollection is the illegality of it was referred to in the argument, but I can't say specifically. My opponent will probably be able to answer more clearly on that, as she was trial counsel. However, I think that this whole issue of the theft of this Bentley took over this trial. And if you look at the transcripts, that's plain, and that takes up so much of the case, when in fact the case itself focuses on only this question of whether he had it in the garage.
It certainly shows a possessory interest in that vehicle if he's able to get tow trucks in there to tow it out and take it to a place, put a cover over it as it's towed there, cut into it. That shows perhaps not ownership, but a possessory interest in that.
It may show, I don't know if it shows a position. It shows, yeah, at that time when they were taking it out of there, certainly there was some interest in it.
And his answer was that he never had, not ever did he have a Bentley in that garage.
And I maintain that he didn't. The Bentley was not in the garage at his direction or his. He didn't have it there. Jermone Gorman did.
Okay.
And whether
Jermone
he was.
Had no interest in that garage, right? He had. Jermone was not on the lease for Lions Gate.
Well,
that was Jamarcus.
Jermone wasn't on the lease at Lions Gate, but Jermone had the lease for the Lions Gate apartment at his. It was located at his residence.
Right.
How much interest Jermone Gorman actually had in the garage and the apartment, I think, is a question that didn't get examined that closely in the district court. But it's not as if Jermone Gorman had no interest here. He had the vehicle in the garage, and he also had the lease to the place at his residence, which was eventually searched.
Jamaica said he was going to bring, told McCray he was going to bring in two fancy vehicles and ask McCray to keep an eye on them, right?
That's what McCray testified to, yes, and the vehicles, but no one testified that it was actually Jamarcus Gorman that brought the vehicles there.
But this fellow, McCray, also says he saw Jamarcus fiddling with the trunk shortly after the agent's visit, said something about it. Well, I've locked my keys in the trunk, something like that.
Right, which was obviously not true,
and
because there were no keys. It was not his vehicle.
By the next day or Monday thereafter, the car's gone, oil spots on
right. That was after the vehicle had been removed.
But
nonetheless, I still don't think, regardless of any of that, I don't think it changed. There are all kinds of charges that could have been brought against Jamarcus Gorman, but they chose perjury on this single answer, and his answer to that one question is literally true, or is an equally possible answer, which is possibly true, and as a result, he can't be convicted for perjury under the case law that this court has already decided. And if there are no further questions, I would reserve whatever time I have left for my rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Conner?
All right, Ms. Conner, before you even get to the podium, I want to ask you this. How was it presented to the jury that his his use of that vehicle, towing it out and so forth, was it labeled as a theft or obstruction or something of that nature to the jury?
No, Your Honor, not by the government. The government referred to it as the removal of the Bentley because we had no way of knowing whether it was done with or without Jermone Gorman's complicity.
So, and what, it wasn't argued to the jury as a theft or a breaking in or a...
There was a breaking in of the trunk, physical breaking in of the trunk for the purpose of removing approximately $100,000 in drug proceeds, which explains part of, well, why would anyone bother to lie about having a Bentley in their garage?
How is the removal of the $100,000 relevant? Could that part, which is fairly prejudicial, been redacted from testimony?
Not without leaving a giant hole in just how did we find this Bentley
and
the condition in which it was. Because the Bentley was identified subsequent to all of that damage, and the photographs were of the Bentley with the Texas sticker on it, which was what McCray identified as, in fact, being the vehicle that was in the garage.
Bentley was worth more than the cash in the trunk, though.
It was.
But not after it was sought by the DA. It was worthless after the DA agent sought it because you couldn't do anything with that Bentley.
In fact, it was not forfeited. It was returned to the Bentley dealership in Texas because it had such extensive damage.
They must have been thrilled. At what point did Gorman exert enough control over the Bentley that we can say he had it? Okay. Did he have it when it was just sitting untouched in his garage? Did he have it once he made the phone call to have it towed away? Did he have it only once he removed it from the garage?
My answer would be all of the above. Jamarcus Gorman obtained a residence in a gated community that had security, and he had a code to get access to it. The garage had a separate clicker, in Mr. McCray's vernacular, which is where the Bentley was parked before it was brought in. He spoke with Mr. McCray, whose office was very close to where the Bentley was going to be parked, to make certain that it would be watched over. That Bentley then appeared. It was associated with Jamarcus Gorman, who had paid over $10,000 in rent in advance, 6 months worth, to secure that space and that security for the Bentley. He exercised control, and I can't imagine any greater control over that Bentley when he orchestrated its removal for the purpose of removing and obtaining the proceeds that were in the trunk. Jamarcus indicated that he had locked the keys in the trunk. Whether or not that is true, such as whether or not Jermone Gorman was in complicity and acting in conjunction with Jamarcus, we do not know. We know that at Jermone's residence, photographs of a Bentley were found. Keys to a Bentley were found. We do not know if that is the same Bentley, because Jermone Gorman had had an 05 Bentley, an 06 Bentley, and now an 07 Bentley. Maybe Jamarcus did lock the keys in the trunk, and that's why he was trying to get into them.
Are you saying that it cost $1,666 a month? To park the Bentley?
That's the residential rent for the condominium, which includes the parking place.
Okay.
And in fact, it was tandem places, so that the Bentley was backed in to the spot nearest the wall. And then Jamarcus parked his expedition on occasion behind the Bentley for more ready access.
How do the two ex-Indianapolis police officers play into this at all?
They are the individuals that Mr. Jamarcus Gorman contacted to commence the removal of the Bentley. It was the third facet of the grand jury's investigation, the materiality element that we were required to prove. The grand jury secretary testified there were three facets: drug trafficking, money laundering, and the involvement of federal law enforcement officers in that removal and vandalizing of the Bentley.
They weren't federal.
They were not. Jermone Gorman's girlfriend, Takea Hogan, had made that allegation to the grand jury, and that she had received that information from Jamarcus Gorman. We then called Jamarcus in to ask him about that. And that's all around the three facets that the grand jury was investigating.
The agents who visited Lionsgate and talked to Jamarcus, how did they miss the Bentley when they go down to the garage area?
If the court looks at the attachment or the government's appendix, you will see that when you go down the elevator and turn to the left, which is the direction that Mr. Jamarcus Gorman took the agents, you cannot see a vehicle that is pulled up against
right.
the wall.
But I can't imagine an agent who wouldn't just take a look around, just out of curiosity. They're pretty curious people.
They normally are, Your Honor. They did not. They followed Mr. Jamarcus Gorman's lead. At that point in time, they knew nothing about Mr. Jamarcus Gorman. And they didn't just explore all around the garage. And that was not only stated by the agents at trial, but by Mr. McRae as well.
It's not what we usually hear about agents.
I can't disagree with that. Nor could I disagree with Judge Rovner's comment about the definition of have, kind of like the definition of is. When a common word, such as have, and it's rather hard to conceive of a word much more common than the word have, may have more than one definition, then there is no insufficiency of the evidence when the jury is called upon and does determine that the question, as the defendant understood it, was falsely answered. And that is exactly what happened here. It is not a Bronston issue. The theft of the funds, part and parcel of the evidence in the trial, the identification of the Bentley, it was not propensity evidence of some other unrelated offense. And if there are no other questions, I would thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 1 minute, counsel.
There was no evidence presented at the trial to suggest that Jamarcus Gorman ever owned the Bentley, ever had keys to the Bentley, or ever drove the Bentley. No such evidence. What the evidence at the trial showed was that Jamarcus Gorman was able to essentially steal the Bentley and break into it. Now, anybody, if I knew DEA agents that would help me with that and I had access to that garage, I could do it too. But I would have never had...
Don't.
I won't. But I would have never had an interest in it. I couldn't, if they asked me the question, did you have a Bentley in the garage? The answer to that would be no, even though I was capable of and did successfully steal it and break into it, which
ever,
is what he
ever
did.
Had was part of the question as well. Did you have or ever have?
Right, and the answer is he still wouldn't ever have it in the garage if what he did was break into it and steal it. He didn't have it in the garage. He had it after they took it out and stole it. It wasn't his at any time.
Well, he had it when it was in the garage being winched onto the tow truck.
He didn't have it at that time either. He was there in the
Who
garage.
Did?
Who had it?
Yeah.
I would say at that point in time that the tow truck people were going to
well,
take it on
right.
the tow truck.
And who are the tow truck people working for?
He called the tow truck people, or either that or the undercover police officer, or whoever these guys were, the agents, whoever they were, they called
they
them.
Federal agents. They're Indianapolis police officers.
Yeah, Mr. Brimley, don't think about doing it because we'd miss your arguments. We really would.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to...